Then we'll come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 470, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 237, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 56, Access to Records, Vulnerable Adult Abuse, Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File 66, State Funded Conservation Easement Restriction, Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File 149, Complementary Hunting Licenses, Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, Mr. President, Senate File 153, Unemployment Compensation Direct Sales. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 475, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 160, Pesticides. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 476, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 47, School Finance Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 477, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 118, Eminent Domain 2. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 35, noes 23, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 478, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration 3. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February 26, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 479, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 60. The House conferees are Representative Harvey, Chairman, Representative Davidson and Larson. From the House of Representatives, message 480, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 106. The House conferees are Representative Wallace, Chairman, Representative Coleman and Harshman. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 481, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 77, Wyoming Lottery. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 33, noes 25, excused 2. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 482, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 42, noes 16, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Is that it?
Bills on third reading and final passage. House Bill 35, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operation, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to search and rescue operation, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Discussion on House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, in looking at this, and I talked with the bill sponsor about this, I think it might be important that we understand what we're doing in this bill. Right now, search and rescue individuals are covered under the Governmental Claims Act. And under the Governmental Claims Act, an individual search and rescue individual can be named and sued in a case, but his employer is required to assume his defense and defend him and to pay any judgment against him up to the $250,000. Above the $250,000 of the Governmental Claims Act, he's immune from any, the rescue searcher would be immune from any actions above that. What this bill does is it removes them from that and puts them over and just simply grants them immunity under a different section in the statute. And so it simply grants them immunity, which is something that this body has done for volunteer firefighters. Volunteer firefighters have the same way. My understanding is that under those situations, you would still sue the sheriff, who would be overseeing that, and you would still have your claims against the sheriff. But nevertheless, the individual firefighters would be immune from suit and have immunity under the statute. That's what this bill does. In talking with the bill sponsors the problem that he was trying to fix with this, Mr. President, was that in the region where he lives, over there in the Great Teton Valley, they depend a lot upon search and rescue individuals, and there's been an incident over there, over where the good senator from almost Idaho lives, at an unfortunate incident where an individual died, and the search and rescue people have been sued, and as a result of that, and they're being named, even though they are covered under the Governmental Claims Act, them being named in lawsuits, it's put a chilling effect on volunteers to volunteer for search and rescue operations. But again, as I understand it, it doesn't necessarily make them immune. It doesn't necessarily stop. If there's been a faulty search or there has been a mistake made in the administration of first aid or things like that, because they are representatives of the sheriff's department, you can still sue the sheriff's department, for example, but they would have individual immunity. So that's what the bill does, the idea behind it, so you can vote that up or vote that down. But I think it is clear to note that either way, Mr. President, that the volunteers are covered. Either way, they're going to be deposed. Either way, they're going to be witnesses in an action if there's a civil action against it. Either way, they're going to be in it up to their neck. and you can decide how you want to deal with it. As for me, I think I'm going to vote to leave them right where they are.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill, and I'd ask you to vote no, and this is really a bill that's more complicated than it looks on the surface. It's a bill that deserves to go through the committee process through a year, and I can see that the chairman of Judiciary wants the bill so badly that he's making hand gestures, and they're not all nice. But he could assign it over to TRW because apparently they have the expertise to do anything or revenue. But here's the problem. I mean, you heard the statement that the victims, and they might be your family members, will be covered through the sheriff's office. So you're granting the immunity to the volunteers, and then your suit becomes against the sheriff. And if I agreed with that, I'd be up here saying vote for it and get it through it. But the law doesn't work that way. And there's a solution to this problem. And the solution is to make sure that claims made at the direction of the sheriff include all the claims of the volunteers. And the volunteers wouldn't be immune. Rather, they would fall within his category. So if you have a $250,000 cap, which we do, it applies to everybody. But, folks, in generally, I mean, you heard this idea that the sheriff would be vicariously liable for the volunteers. That is, as an employer is liable for the actions of his employee, they would be treated like employees. Here's the problem with that analysis. When you give immunity to the employees, or in this case, the search and rescue team, or the volunteers, that's absolute immunity. So there can be no vicarious liability stretching out of that, leaping out of that. So you can't go to somebody and say, I'm going to sue you for somebody that's immune from torts. You can't do it because there's immunity. So there's nothing to be liable for. So if we went out there and said all employees that work for all companies are immune from suit, the companies would have no liability because the employees have no liability to be vicariously liable from. We had the discussion earlier in the on the first reading that Committee of the Whole that this has unintended consequences, and there are certainly times where volunteers can go out and do things to make things, aggravate things, make things worse, and there are certain things that they ought to be instructed on, and there's a solution beyond this bill for the problem. And if you heard the testimony from the Teton County issue, it was, well, there was never any liability because they threw out those claims. But just in case in the future we might have a hard time getting volunteers, folks, it just doesn't work that way. I mean, first of all, it's volunteers go there and they do the right thing. And when things happen like in Teton County, the courts throw them out. The system worked. But to take a bill that says, look, these folks will have no liability, and you don't have to worry if your loved one has an aggravated injury because the sheriff and his trained people will still have liability. If they sign that task to an immune person that did something that was terribly negligent that caused an aggravation, there's no liability to that unless they – I mean, the only thing you could do is say, well, you picked the wrong person to do it. Maybe that would get you there. But there is no vicarious liability for people that are immune. And so when you hear that, it's just a wrong statement. And the concern I have on this bill going through is those kinds of statements where you hear offhand, hey, it's no big deal because the sheriff will be liable. And that's wrong. And you shouldn't be told that because that's not the law. And there's a solution to this. And if we can redraft the bill more carefully next time, or force it onto our colleagues in TRW. But I urge you to vote no on this bill. It came too late. It hasn't been through the vetting process. It'll have unintended consequences.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But the question I have in today's law is, if let's take, for example, you have four people on a rescue team, and for whatever reason they do something grossly negligent and results in a large amount of damage, does the $250,000 apply individually, so when a person sues, they have $1 million worth of potential claims plus another $250,000 against the sheriff, or is it capped as per occurrence, or is it per individual?
Senator Christensen or Ross? Mr. Vice President. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, having not been here on Friday and not having the luxury of the conversation, I'd just like to respond to a couple of issues. And one of them is, my fellow senators, we have some pretty similar circumstances. And, for example, if a fireman makes a choice not to go into a burning building to save someone inside, they're granted that. If a search and rescue volunteer knows there's somebody out in an avalanche path, they get to make that choice also. And that choice has to do with, are we putting the whole team at risk to go after one person who chose to be out there? And those are the kind of things that come up. One side has some limits on their personal liability. We rely on these volunteers. And here in the other example, while we carefully talk about liability like it's not a big deal, and there are limits and so forth, when you have a group of volunteers, and in the case, I'll use the case in my community of that search and rescue team, primarily made up of younger people. Some of them are with families, some of them are not. But they invest hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars of their own time and money into giving this great service to the community. The sheriff is charged by statute with being responsible for search and rescue. There is a clear linkage between that. And I can only speak for my community, but the relationship is directly tied to that sheriff's department. It isn't there is a clear connection, and they operate, our team operates under and with the sheriff's office. And so there is a linkage there. There is a statutory linkage. If we don't have some sort of protection that is similar, like, or the same as our volunteer firemen who are also called on life and death decisions as volunteers, it has that chilling effect. It has that dampening effect. When you have young people who say, I'll give my time, I'll give my money, but then for me to go hire my own attorney if the lawsuits start coming because of a tough decision, all of a sudden they're getting tapped in ways that they didn't plan on, or in good judgment, they may not make those choices to be involved. I think most of the communities, a good share of the communities around the state, rely on volunteers, especially for search and rescue. It's an expensive process that only happens once in a while. You can't man an entire sheriff's department to meet that statutory responsibility. Many organizations rely on these good-hearted volunteers, and to reduce this liability on their backs for what they're trying to do to help their fellow man, I think this is a reasonable bill, and we need to look at it. I mean, I'll close with, and I can't tell you how everything ended up, but we had a case up there where a volunteer made a decision, just like I described. He was killed later in another search and rescue, and his children were having to hire the attorneys to protect what little bit of estate he had because they were coming after his estate. And it was just one of those tough calls.
Further discussion? Mr. President? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Vice President, just to go back and just let's go back and let's really be clear of what the situation is right now. Let's just take the example that my good friend from Teton County just said. It, right now, as the law is now, that if you're a volunteer who does search and rescue that's coordinated under the supervision or the control of the sheriff, then that person is a public employee under the Governmental Claims Act. Being a public employee under the Governmental Claims Act, you are granted, I'm reading from directly from the statute, a governmental entity and its public employees, while acting within the scope of their duties, are granted immunity from liability for any tort except as provided in the Governmental Claims Act. The government, as we've talked about, the Governmental Claims Act is $250,000. Let's talk about a couple of the things. But first of all, also this is 139-104B, when liability is alleged against any public employee, which would include a volunteer, in the situation we're talking about, if the government entity determines he was acting within the scope of his duty, whether or not alleged to have been committed maliciously or fraudulently, the governmental entity shall provide a defense at its expense. So there's a requirement that the government entity provide the defense for this employee. In addition, in C, a governmental entity shall assume and pay a judgment entered under this act against any of its public employees, provided they were acting in the scope of their employment and a few other things. But ultimately, so again, what you have and where they are now is you would be sued. The sheriff's department would be required to provide you a defense. If there's a judgment against you, you're immune from any judgment above the $250,000. If there's a judgment that comes in, they have to pay that judgment for you. The inconvenience to you is that you would be a named party in the suit, but there would be no judgment outstanding against you because, to the extent it's allowed by the Governmental Claims Act, the Sheriff's Department, in our example, would have to pay that. Now, with respect to that, we had this discussion just a year ago about what is the amount of immunity. And this body has, under the Governmental Claims Act, they have the sum of, you're limited to, so this is the only liability that's there. Everything above this amount, the employee is immune from, as the law stands now, without this bill. The sum of $250,000 to any claimant for any number of claims arising out of a single transaction or occurrence, or the sum of $500,000 for all claims for all claimants arising out of a single transaction or occurrence. That's what the law is now. And so the governmental entity would pay on behalf of its employee up to those limits. Anything above those limits, the employee and the governmental entity are immune from. So the way that they are now, these individuals are covered. Would they be named in the lawsuit? Yes. Would a defense be provided for them by their employer? Yes. If there's a judgment, would it be paid by the employer? Yes. What if the judgment exceeded $250,000, or in certain cases $500,000? The employee's immune.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Folks, I had an opportunity to talk to the bill's sponsor. And quite frankly, he believes that this bill would put the volunteers in the same position that they really are now. It's just that the sheriff would be covered, supposedly. But the good majority floor leader is absolutely correct. If the underlying volunteer is immune, there can be no vicarious liability, or what we also call respondeat superior, the employer being responsible or somebody being responsible for the conduct under their direction, that's out the window. And the bottom line was for the sponsor when I talked to him was that he was afraid that they weren't going to get volunteers because they had named in a lawsuit. But the reality of what he's attempting to do is that it doesn't do what he wants it to do. And if you do this, well, you're just giving a blanket immunity to all volunteers, and you've cut off what we've already determined under the Governmental Claims Act is a viable methodology for you to at least collect some damages if you're negligent. The limits are there. The good senator from Natrona County was absolutely correct. It's 250 per claim, an aggregate of a total of 500,000. So I'd urge you to be careful about this bill. We all want to help the volunteers, but the good majority of Florida is absolutely correct. There's a way to do that, but it isn't with this bill. Because what you've done is you've cut off and you've given complete blanket immunity for somebody who's negligent or does something inappropriate. So I'd urge you to be very careful on your vote and to vote no.
Further discussion, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I just want to make sure, I know that when you get the lawyers up, it may be confusing, but if you look over at 2 and 3 of the bill, pages 2 and 3, you can see very easily what's happening. On page 3, lines 20 through 22, that's the existing language that says these folks are presently covered under the Governmental Tort Claims Act. And there is a total amount, there's a $250,000 per claim, and if there are multiple claimants, you get up to $500,000. That's the existing law. There's no evidence that, and most of these entities are insured through the Wyoming Association of Risk Managers, a joint pool. There's no indication that there is any solvency or need to change that. So they've taken the exact language where they're covered under the Tort Claims Act, which gives them immunity. Your only claim is against the state insurance. And they moved it over to the immunity language, which is over on page 2, the same exact language. And so you have a situation where these folks are already immune up to the limits. Now, I could think of lots of scenarios where you take the ski volunteers on an avalanche, and the sheriff collects everybody, and they say, okay, everybody follow me on my tracks. Do not go below my track or don't go above my tracks because I'm going to make the high cut because I know where the avalanche danger is. I'll make the highest cut. I don't want to get higher. And somebody listens to it, and some cowboy says, gee, I see some free powder up there, and goes and does a higher cut, cuts off an avalanche and kills somebody. And you're going to say he's immune because he didn't follow instructions, but just because he was a volunteer? And those claimants have nothing? At least under this act, they're covered under the insurance pool. And there's a total amount of liability for each claim. And the claim would be that event that all took place. But to say these folks have absolutely no responsibility, what ends up happening is, and then you get the sheriff. The sheriff says, well, I don't care what you do. I'm not responsible for you. The state's not responsibility. Have at it. Take your snow machines up there, start ripping and roaring. If you set off 3 avalanches, bury a house or a kid, I don't care. I'm not liable. I submit to you that's not good policy. The reason why we created the Governmental Tort Claims Act is in part to promote good conduct, smart conduct, make sure the sheriff's are attending to their volunteers, and the volunteers are listening. And this law has been in effect for a long time, and we've always been able to get volunteers, and you'll still get them. It's just one of those instances where somebody's waking up too late at night and thinking things to do. The existing law works fine.
Ready to the question? House Bill 35, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson District 2.
No.
Anderson District 28.
No.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe. Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
No.
Emmerich.
No.
Esquibel. Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
Yes.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 6 ayes, 24 noes.
House Bill 35, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 35 has failed to pass the Senate. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 41. Will the reading clerk please read the House Bill?
House Bill 41, Wild Bison Licensors, sponsored by Representative Gingrich, an act relating to game and fish, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Have an amendment? There are a couple of amendments. Reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 41.
House Bill 41, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, corrected copy, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. And, Mr. President, I hope you will give me some leave. I'm going to have to talk about both of the bill and the amendment as they are rather interrelated. Mr. President, what the amendment does is it puts in this bill an appropriation, so it will require a roll call vote. And the appropriation is to be used for the purpose of defending the rights of Wyoming citizens in the Second Amendment to possess and use any firearm legal pursuant to Wyoming law and useful in hunting bison. And you should construe the useful in hunting bison as a... You should construe that so it has to be both legal pursuant to Wyoming law for hunting bison and useful in hunting bison, including defending against any executive orders ability of Wyoming citizens to hunt or manage bison. Mr. President, this is a... Let me back up. This bill gives us some ability. If there is a major gun control effort emanating out of Washington, D.C., and certainly the headlines are such that they are clearly considering such, that for those guns that are useful in hunting bison, we'll have an ability for our Attorney General to go into court, have some resources, so he can defend our Second Amendment rights. And, Mr. President, that's not everything that some people might want in terms of defense of Second Amendment rights, as it won't include the guns that are not useful hunting bison, but we have to stick to what the bill's about, and the bill's about hunting bison. And those are really the large hunting rifles that are useful for really for any big game hunting, bison being the biggest perhaps of our big game, but like any big game. And that's the core, Mr. President, of our Second Amendment. Those are the weapons that the Second Amendment is clearly aimed at. And there's another piece to that, and that's the ability to defend against executive orders which would limit our ability to hunt or manage bison. And given where the bison are and the amount of federal land that's in that area, that's been a real threat over the years, that they would limit our hunting in unfortunate ways up there. So it's important in terms of the purposes of this bill. It doesn't give us everything we want, but it does as the bill itself does, Mr. President. Gives us protection in our ability to manage bison. The original bill talks about some of the licenses that's necessary to protect the bison hunt. The firearms are the tool that's needed in the bison hunt. That's being protected by this amendment. The threat of the federal executive order and regulations, which is also being protected by this, would also threaten our ability to hunt bison. And, Mr. President, you know, hunting has long been part of our Wyoming heritage. This is perhaps the largest of our big game we're seeking to protect the ability to hunt. And this, I think, when you look at our predecessors on this land, the Native Americans, this would have been a measure they would have understood, the importance of protecting the ability of our citizens to hunt these magnificent animals. That's what they did. That's what we want to be able to continue to do. And, Mr. President, this amendment and this bill go a long way toward protecting those rights. I urge adoption of the amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, while I absolutely agree with the sentiment behind this amendment, I question its germaneness to the bill itself. Yesterday, Mr. President, you ruled an amendment of mine out of order over firefighters' license plates because I added a fee to that. That strikes me as having been a lot more relevant to that bill than this is to this bill. Mr. President, I don't frankly find this any more relevant than if we had language in here prohibiting the government from billeting troops in people's homes. It's another constitutional amendment, and I would ask for a ruling on the relevance of this.
Mr. Vice President.
Well, Mr. President, you ruled on one of my amendments yesterday, and I think the ruling was that you thought it was not germane,
right,
and the Rules Committee supported you. However, this is a lot different, so I really believe this is germane.
Senator Roethlis.
Mr. President, I would concur with my good colleague from Sheridan that this is, while a nice effort in including the word bison several times, in very creative ways, still not germane. Further, it provides a kick-out clause in 20 through 22 to make sure that it doesn't have to apply for bison by making it explicitly clear that you can be 11 your way out of the bison restriction. So it's an admirable piece of work, but I would agree it's not germane. It's certainly not with the spirit of the bill, and when you read the title, it has very little to do with funding Second Amendment lawsuits.
Thank you. Senator Dockstetter.
President, I certainly want to stand for the Second Amendment, but remind you what we started with was this bison herd up in the Jackson area. It was started in 1980 with 50, now it's grown to 900. So what they're doing is reducing the license fees. Cow-calf, $250 for residents and $1,000 for non-residents, and bulls remain at $400 for residents, $2,500 for non-residents. That's the basis of the bill and how it got started. But as for the amendment, wouldn't want to stand against the Second Amendment, but just reminding folks what the bill started as.
Well, okay. This is the chair's ruling that it is germane. And I assume that there's going to be a Rules Committee.
Mr. President! Point of order, I'd call for a Rules Committee on this.
Rules Committee will meet in my office. Senate will stand at ease until the sound of the gavel.
Germans get into everything.
I'm looking for a
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to explain the ruling of the Rules Committee?
Thank you, Mr. President. I will. With respect to this analysis, folks, this is a rule with respect to the analysis on germaneness, not on the constitutionality. And that is, and the Rules Committee affirmed the President's decision that it was germane. Germaneness is covered at page 272 of your Masons. It's section 402. The rule provides every amendment proposed must be germane to the subject of the proposition or to the section or paragraph to be amended. Paragraph 2. To determine whether an amendment is germane, the question is to be answered is whether the amendment is relevant, appropriate, and a natural and logical sequence to the subject matter of the original proposal. 3, to be germane, the amendment is required only to relate to the subject matter. It may entirely change the effect or be in conflict with the spirit of the original motion or measure and still be germane to the subject. So, folks, when you look at this bill and you're doing your analysis, if you look at the white copy of the bill, the original one, it was limiting the number of wild bison licenses available in a lifetime. The engrossed copy, as it came over to us, enlarged that. They probably should have used adjusting the numbers because we've actually limited some licenses, but you've offered new for female and calf. So it could be argued that the subject is different. Or got expanded, but with respect to this amendment, by the insertion that this is to deal with bison, makes it germane in the opinion of the ruling. Having said that, if you go to your Constitution says that this is Article 3, Section 20. Laws to be passed by bill, alteration of amendment of bills. No law shall be passed except by bill. And no bill shall be altered or amended as on its passage through either of the houses to change its original purpose. You could take a germane amendment and render your bill unconstitutional because you've changed its original intent and adoption. So as you're listening to the debate, think forward to the bill itself. The committee ruled that this is a germane amendment. We're not telling you that if you adopt this amendment, that the bill remains constitutional. In fact, I'll just be candid. For me, while germane, I think the bill becomes unconstitutional if you adopt it, but that's for your decision to make. You get to decide that as a member, so the only admonition is that we have ruled it germane, confirmed the President's position. But that doesn't get you over the voting hurdle as a senator. As a senator, you still have to, you have to take your step one, leap one more step and say, by allowing this amendment, can I pass the bill at the end? And that should be part of your decision. That, I assume, will be part of the debate. It's within the parameters of fair debate on the amendment to talk about whether it renders the bill unconstitutional, and that ultimately becomes your decision, not to be challenged later until a court takes a look at it.
So we're back on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Question's been called on the amendment. It does have an appropriation, which would require a roll call vote. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines? Johnson,
aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Miller.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment number 1 to the House Bill 41 has been adopted. We have another amendment. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 41. Mr. Majority.
I may withdraw, please.
I'm sorry? This is a Nicholas Amendment, amendment number 2.
I'd like to withdraw. It actually was put into the First Amendment.
All right. Without objection, that amendment has been withdrawn. We are now back on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, I just draw folks' attention that no law shall be passed except by bill, and no bill shall be so altered or amended on its passage through either House as to change its original purpose. Again, authors of the bill are the exclusive control of what the enactment or the acting clause says, and this bill came to us saying that it would adjust fees for wild bison license, limiting the number of wild bison license available in a lifetime, and providing for an effective date. Since the time of drafting that bill, it's been substantially enlarged on the House, and now again, I ask your due consideration on the constitutional issue.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, what we've done here is we have protected our ability to hunt bison against what we think is a real threat of federal regulation that would remove many of the most important firearms that we use in the hunting of bison. And we have protected our ability to hunt bison against federal executive orders and regulations. And that's something in that area. There's a lot of federal land. We've had trouble with that in the past. We've been able to negotiate solutions, but we've had trouble. And you can see it in the growth of the herd in the Teton area. Mr. President, I'm going to reach back now. A few years ago, I read a very good article, I believe in our state legislature's magazine, on this kind of issue. And the gist of that, I wish I could recall the specific citation, but the gist of that was the courts have given the legislature wide latitude in determining constitutionality on this sort of thing. And I think the nexus between the licensing of buffalo hunting and the ability to use those licenses effectively is adequate to sustain what we've done and to sustain this bill. And then, Mr. President, I'd like to shift the ground a little bit and back up and let's think about what we're doing. We're trying to protect some of our fundamental rights so that they can be employed in hunting bison and the rest of the big game hunting we're doing. We aren't covering, because it's not, wouldn't have been germane, the full scope of the Second Amendment right, but we're trying to protect the core of it, which is the ability to use those rifles, hunting rifles. That's always been considered part of what we can do. And it's under threat from attack from Washington. But, Mr. President, I want to remind us of one thing in all this, and that is we're under threat from Washington. But what we're seeking to do, Mr. President, is to defend ourselves in court, in federal court, from that threat. And I think we should remind ourselves to be thankful every day that we live in these United States, where when our rights are threatened, we can go to court, the court will defend those rights. We don't have to take military action in the streets, we go to court. And we trust our opponents to rely on the judgment of those courts, and we trust our opponents to be true to the oath of office that we all take to support, obey, and defend the Constitution. And that's what helps keep this a civil society, Mr. President. And I think every now and then we need to remind ourselves that that's what we've got here and thank the good Lord for it. Mr. President, I advocate for the passage of this bill. It will help us protect our rights and protect our right to hunt.
Further discussion, Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. As amended, in particular, I'm looking at the amendment, and I'm going to suggest to you it makes this bill a sham. If you'll read the amendment, the resources to defend are good through June 30th, 2014, and then they go away. You're applying for a buffalo license. You apply right now. You can hunt in 2013. By the 2014 season, there's no resources to defend our gun rights. You know what? It's okay to stand up and say we're going to defend gun rights. If you're serious about it, you defend them. You leave the resources there, the people there. But that is not what this amendment does. It provides the resources for 1 year, for one hunting season, period. Then we back off. I don't know what the game plan is. But that's a sham. It's the kind of thing where we try and hoodwink our voters, our constituents, say, whoop, we've strutted our stuff. We're going to defend your gun rights. And in fact, we haven't. If you don't provide the resources to protect them, it's just a sham. And I urge you to vote no on the bill. Let's look at it again next session. If we want to defend gun rights, let's write a good bill that does that, provide the resources to do it. For goodness sake, do it right.
Further discussion, Senator Ebout.
Well, Mr. President, briefly, and I don't think this bill is a sham, members of the Senate. You know, my colleague from Casey is right. It's only for one hunting season, but that's the important part of it. It is for one hunting season. And a lot of us understand what's going on in Washington, and the threat of an executive order is real. It's now, it's today. And I think that we have to step up today to protect the people from this executive order fiasco that's going on in Washington, and particularly if it deals with our Second Amendment rights to bear arms. That's very critical to me. And so, yeah, we do need to come back and talk about a later date. I don't argue that point, but I'm talking about reality today. Today are facts. Facts are we could have an executive order. We could have the right to bear arms threatened for the state of Wyoming, particularly in the way this bill is drafted and this amendment deal with the hunting of bison. So I would urge the body to vote aye.
Senator Burns.
Against the amendment.
The bill?
I'm sorry, on against the bill with the amendment on it. I think, Mr. President, we should reflect on what the majority floor leader said about the constitutionality of this bill. What was the purpose, original purpose, of this bill and of the sponsor of this bill? It was basically to lower hunting fees on bison, period. That's it. I absolutely agree with the threat from Washington on our gun rights by both the tall senator from Natrona and the good senator from Fremont County. But that shouldn't be on this bill. That should have been an amendment to the budget bill. That could have been a separate bill. To attach it onto this bill, we called it germane. It was ruled germane by the Rules Committee and so forth. So I guess if we're going to vote for this because we think it's constitutional, If you think it's constitutional, yeah, you should vote for it. But does that mean that every license fee bill that comes forward from now on could and should have additional statements and additional appropriations on it for something that really doesn't have anything to do with those license fees? Katie, bar the door on that one.
Senator Hicks.
The purpose, and the purpose of the bill was to reduce license fees originally, so you can do what? Just to hunt bison. And you cannot segregate the tool from the activity. The opponents are trying to say, well, it's not germane and it's not constitutional because now we're going to segregate the tool from the activity. You can't do that. Without the tool, you cannot conduct the activity. Go through the bill. It talks about, through the bill, licenses for bison, licenses for lifetime, adjusting fees for wild bisons. Those are adjectives in preparation for the activity, and the activity is hunting. You can't hunt without a weapon. Absolutely impossible. So the idea that you can sit here and say, well, it's not constitutional because you don't need a gun to hunt. That's like saying that you don't need sun to grow grass and water doesn't run downhill. You can't have one without the other, folks. So vote it up, vote it down. But on the constitutionality, there is a clear and concise. The activity is only supported by the tools, and the tool supports the activity. You cannot divorce the two.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Not only back on the bill, but back on the bison themselves. We brought this because of the bison herd was up in Jackson. The herd's now at 900, and the management goal is 500. So this bill is designed to drop those fees and perhaps entice some people to get involved and bring that herd, that Jackson Hole bison herd, back to the 500 management goal.
Well, let's go to Senator Hastert and then Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I imagine everybody's already made up their mind, but I've heard this argument, making the statements of the hate for the federal government and the possibilities of executive orders and all of this stuff. I mean, I've been hearing that for over 4 years all this stuff's going to happen, and to take out your frustrations on this was a good bill. It was a good bill till 10 minutes ago, and then unfortunately, we had to take our frustrations out and our disdain for what the federal government's doing. And this isn't the place for it. And it's unfortunate that we had to take this. I imagine we're going to vote it up. And, it's not going to end up going anywhere the way it is now. And that's really sad. I think we had a good concept. I think there's people that wanted to hunt bison. And you talk about the instrument to go hunting. Yeah, you've got to have a gun to go hunting. Most people have to have a pickup truck, a camper. The list goes on.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, thank you. Whether you like the bill because of the amendment or the basis for the bill, I'd ask that you support the bill. This bill goes to addressing an environmental problem we have going on at home. Particular species gotten out of control. We don't have a great mechanism to deal with it. We're having some trouble. The core of this bill is to go back and help that. The amendment may be a short-time amendment, but the core of the bill really talks about a problem we have with bison that also impacts the health of the elk herd, and that elk herd moves around the state. In the last few years, they've spread out, and they are transient. They move back and forth a little bit, and in time they do migrate. And so we want to keep that core herd healthy. This all plays into that. I'd encourage you to support the bill.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and for the bill, we've been hunting buffalo in Wyoming for centuries. And I agree with this bill protecting the ability to do that, lowering the fees, and putting more people out there to control this herd. So I urge your vote for this bill. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the bill, and you can see the train coming down the track. Fair enough. But a couple things I'd remind folks, and that's this. First of all, when the authors of this bill chose to write their bill, There are three authors. They had unlimited boundaries to create the title to anything they wanted to create. And they created a very narrow title. And I've been inundated probably more than most of you with emails the last few days. But one of the things that always brings me back is that we're governed by the rule of law. And in our case, one of those rule of laws is the Constitution, which says you shall not change the subject of a bill beyond that which the author's original purpose was. Now, when I hear that this is going to protect, this amendment alone is going to protect your Second Amendment rights, I point this out. If you look at the amendment, all it does is provide an appropriation to the Office of the Attorney General, allowing them to spend or not spend. The Attorney General serves at the direction of the governor. There's no directive that he start a lawsuit, begin a lawsuit, or pursue one. Now, I'll tell you my personal views. If you want to go out and reduce that herd size with a cannon, I don't think it'd be very good public opinion, but I wouldn't care. I'm one of those persons that I believe in the First Amendment rights, and I believe that it's a shame that we're having to defend those rights in the way we are, but we are. But we fall back always on the rule of law, and we will get our objectives through the rule of law. There are three branches of government. And in this case, the executive branch has to exercise the judgment of whether to make a lawsuit, file a lawsuit. And that's the chief executive officer. It's the governor. And if the governor wants to file a lawsuit, he walks a door down from his office, walks into his attorney general and says, file a lawsuit. This doesn't direct the governor to do that. The governor will do that because that's his judgment. If the attorney general says back to the governor, governor, I need a budget of $250,000. First of all, he has a litigation budget. You just passed it. And second of all, if he needs additional money, he says, governor, I'm going to need another $200,000, and the governor says, fine. He walks back to his office, looks at his budgets, first looks at his emergency budget, looks at his various accounts, and he B-11s the money to the attorney general's office. There is nothing in this bill that directs the governor what to do. We should talk to the governor. We should encourage him to be prepared for an executive order that might be unconstitutional. If that happens, we should say, governor, file the lawsuit, join any federal lawsuit. In fact, file a lawsuit in the United States federal court in Wyoming to enjoin the enforcement of that law until the constitutional issues have been resolved. We come back here and find out if there are any states' rights issues. If there are, we interpret our statute to be broader. So you've just involved three of the arms of government. The legislative branch creates the laws. The governor decides by executive decision whether he's going to file the lawsuit, directs his appointed AG to file it. He has the B-11 authority because we've already given it to him. And if they want to challenge the implementation of the law or its enforcement in Wyoming, they walk over, file a $50 fee and walk across the street, file a lawsuit. So that's the process as it works. And I have confidence that we should work that way and will work that way. But when we come back to our legislative roles, as you're making the decision, go back and look at your Constitution. And I tell you that obviously you can tell where I've come down on that issue. And your judgment is your own, but it's not the ends that make the difference. It's the analysis that you begin with the Constitution, looking at that enactment clause that those authors put in there. That's where your constitutional obligation ends. I love the amendment, but that doesn't make it consistent with the rule of law.
Question? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. Folks, I've been around here long enough, and I've seen quite a few things come through. I remember one time when we had a bill to raise fees or taxes, and when it left the Senate, it removed all the fees and taxes. And that was completely against what the original intent of the bill was, but it moved forward, got passed, got signed by the governor. Now, this bill has an appropriation in it. The governor can, if there's anything unconstitutional in it, if he makes that analysis, he can take that thing out. So, you know, Mr. President, I think the original intent of the bill to address a problem with the bison hood up there, herd up there, is a legitimate one. That fixes this. Any other problems that anybody may have with the amendment has been brought up, that those are only going to be a problem for a year. But if we have a problem with the executive branch back there or somebody else, then there are some funds available. And folks, remember, we did cut a lot out of everybody's budget this year, and $250,000 could help someplace somewhere. So let's vote this bill through. Hope the House concurs with us. I think the Tall Center from Natrona County has a good constitutional and germane amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first I want to answer the complaint that the appropriation was not for long enough time. Mr. President, that's the way we routinely do appropriations on bills. You appropriate enough money to carry it through to the start of the next biennium. That's what this does. Then we'll deal with the issue in the general budget. And I'll leave it to the Appropriations Committee and the Executive Branch to arm wrestle over whether this appropriation becomes part of the standard budget or needs to come back in an expanded budget. They can handle that, but this is the way we routinely do things. So that argument is not valid. The second thing I would say to the Senate is a lot of the debate has been about the amendment. The time for that was before the vote on the amendment. Now let's look to the bill. And the bill is important particularly to the people in Teton County, but I imagine also to the people in Park County, because in the area surrounding our national parks, we're having problems with this bison herd. And so I would urge those of you who supported the amendment, in fairness, to support the bill, because the bill is important, the subject matter is important, and Mr. President, I urge adoption of the bill.
House Bill 41 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
No.
Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
No.
Johnson. Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 16 ayes, 14 noes.
House Bill 41. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 41 has passed the Senate. House Bill 177, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum, sponsored by Representative Crone, and Act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. The reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 177.
House Bill 177, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 15.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Mr. President, was it the amendment read in?
Yes, yes.
I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 177. Folks, excuse me. Just a minute. I will in my throat. I'll be like your dad sooner or later.
Godfather.
Yeah, the Godfather. Tony, this is a good amendment. Vote for it. Mr. President, what this does on the Hathaway, remember there are two areas of two tiers. And with respect to the top two tiers, we require that you have two years of foreign language. And then we added new additional requirements. You have to pick up another 2 years of either vocational technical education or band and music. And what this does is say, as an alternative to those new options, you could pick up another 2 years of languages. So it doesn't have to be the same language, but if you are a person that wanted to get four languages, and in order to do that, you couldn't find time to do the voc ed, the band music, then these would substitute for those obligations. It only applies to the top two tiers. On the bottom tiers, I'll talk about that later on the bill, but that's not germane to this amendment.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, I actually raise in favor of the amendment. If you think about language and the way we have it right now, if you really want to pursue language, it says you can do it prior to ninth grade or during your high school tenure. But if you're really going to pursue language in an effective manner, this gives you that opportunity to do that. And to be effective in pursuing a language, you have to take more than these 2 years we have in there right now, if you effectively really want to do that. So I rise in support of the amendment.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, rise in support of the amendment. What we were looking for, obviously, through this Hathaway Success Curriculum revision is increasing the rigor, and this amendment certainly does that as well. It provides another option for students to obtain a successful curriculum with a higher rigor. Appreciate the amendment from the Majority Floor Leader.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Maybe I think I understand here, but I'm a little concerned that we're making such a major change on this very important bill at kind of the final hour. The bill itself has gone through three different sessions of consideration. And thank you. And now after this bill has gone through three different times, now we're coming through with this major change, kind of a late hour. I have some concerns, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 177, say aye. Opposed?
No.
Amendment's passed. Any further discussion on the bill? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, you know, I still remain to have concerns with respect to the entire bill, and it goes something like this. We've already talked about you have a certain amount of mandated courses to get the top two tiers. And now we're telling students that in order to get the top two tiers, you also have to have either 2 years of band, music, performing arts, or 2 years of vocational technical education. That means as you're sitting there and beginning your look through high school, you say, okay, this is the course that I want to take. But as you're moving through, and I want to make one thing for clear, I just don't want folks at home or abroad to think differently. I think the band, performing arts, musical instruments, as well as voc ed, are some of the that are important to your mental development and will make you perform better. But I also feel the same way about languages, 4 years of it. I feel the same way about any number of courses that are available as electives. And we picked out in the Hathaway course, the success curriculum, 4 years of math, 4 years of English, a couple of years of other requirements, social studies, things like that. And those were the success curriculum. And they were adopted by the university as elements for early admission and a recognition that those are required to be successful. But I can give you an example with respect to at least one of my children, or a couple of my children, who had at least a couple of areas of sports they were pretty phenomenal at. And if you want to be a top-tier athlete in the last 2 years of school and you're doing two-a-day practices and you're hitting the bench or the bench in the middle and you begin to look at what you have, then you're taking those some of those electives and converting them to study hall to get your studies done. I'm telling my kids never got home before 8:30 to 9, and then they'd hit the books and they'd be, you know, we'd kind of like them to be bed by at least midnight. And, you know, there's a lot of kids like that getting phenomenal grades, doing phenomenally at sports that require that kind of effort. And as a parent looking back, we did make our parents, you know, my wife and I made a decision that that was just as important as taking band, music. And in the end, I'm disappointed they couldn't do it all. I really am. I wish they would have stayed in piano their whole life. I wish they'd have been in choir. I wish they'd been in music. I wish they'd have taken industrial arts, learn how to break down a car. I wish they'd have done everything. There just wasn't time. And the children along the way have to make some choices. And we've already laid out the requirements, and we decided these are elements of choices. And now what we have are a group of folks coming in and said, we want our positions or our taught courses to be elevated to the same course as math and sciences. And, you know, folks, for some kids, there are other ways to go. You can take extra sciences. You can take advanced sciences, advanced math. You can go to the college and take classes. But there's not enough time when you make these other requirements. And there are plenty of other things that are adequate substitutes. Now, with the lower two tiers, my concern is you've eliminated 2 years of language and made that optional. If your son or daughter is going to the community college and that's where they know they're going to go, that's fine. But a lot of these emails, I've seen people, my children would rather take these in languages and they'll be great in college. They're not going to get automatic admission, folks. Those 2 years, that the 2 years of languages were really to let you know you need to hit those in order to get automatic admission to college, and we've eliminated it. Makes no sense at all.
Larry Christensen. Thank you. On and against the bill. We just heard some great reasons and a little bit of history. This isn't going to apply to anyone on my side anymore, but I have seen the example of students that some choose to get deeply involved in the sports activity. We've heard recently that more employers are looking at those kind of team sports, depending on the positions they're looking for the abilities that people learned in working together in a group, overcoming obstacles, and so forth. And so it's becoming more of a priority in industry to look at other skills besides just the scholastic record. This does put a strain on that and starts to steer it in a direction that may be taking us in the wrong direction.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've got some history, as the Senate knows, with the Hathaway program. It was my bill that came in with a scholarship program in it, and Truth in Advertising, the House Education Committee greatly broadened what I had done in that original bill. And I was working with a senator from Albany County then, and we heard what they were doing, putting in what became the full Hathaway and naming it. We said, wonderful, came back and sold it to the Senate. And I was on the committee that put the success curriculum together. So I've been very protective. And, Mr. President, I was going to stand up and make the same kind of arguments that you've just heard from the previous two senators. But now, with the amendment that went on, that has changed the bill enough so that I think that it is something that we can support. It is giving, you know, the Hathaway Success Curriculum takes up 50-60% of the class time in high school. This will take up a bit more, raise the amount that you have to do for the Hathaway. But by giving this third option, pursuing a foreign language so that you really get there with a foreign language, because 2 years, I'll tell you from personal experience, 2 years is not enough. It takes more. And with having done that, I think, Mr. President, we've broadened the offerings such that it is a reasonable thing to invade the electives, because it enables use of the choice here to fill out our reasonable program. So now that it's been broadened by the amendment we put on, I urge adoption of the bill.
Question.
Senator Dockstader.
Oh, Mr. President, I'll be brief. The bill's gone through a lot of work, not just in this session, but in years past. It's gone through the Education Committee. It's been worked and reworked, and it sounds like we have something now that's acceptable, and I'd urge your support.
Question's been called. House Bill 177 have been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer, Nicholas, Ewing, Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Bonfaitern,
aye.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
House Bill 177, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 177 has passed the Senate. We have gubernatorial appointments to deal with. We're at that order of business. Senate confirmation of appointments. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Hold on 1 second. No, I need my script. Think of the anesthesia's not worn off. Yeah, because it was sitting right here.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
Assume the position we're going to frisk you.
Well, that's one of those things that, wait a minute, no. Mr. President, I put it in a very safe spot, my script, and my colleagues in front are accusing me that the anesthetic not having worn off yet, but sure feels good. Did you read your line?
I already did. We are at that order of business. Senate confirmation of appointments.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I have moved that the Senate resolve itself into open executive session.
All those in favor say aye.
This general stuff is good.
Those opposed, no.
It lasts longer than you think.
The reading clerk will read the entire list, unless you're going to remove somebody, Mr. Majority.
I am going to, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd like the list to remove the following. On the first page of our list, the Public Service Commission, there's both the William Russell Commissioner, Kara Brighton, Deputy Commissioner. I'd ask that those be removed to be voted on separately. On the Cultural Trust Fund Board, I would ask that the name of Nancy Schiffer be removed to vote on separately. With respect to the first name on the Board of Outfitters and Professional Guides, there's the name of Scott Edberg. I would ask that it be removed altogether and not voted on because that is an appointment made by the Game and Fish Commission and is not to be confirmed by us. And I'm just looking to make to the chairman of TRW, he advises me that I did that correctly.
Okay.
So with those changes, I'd ask you to read the list.
Reading clerk will read the list of nominees.
Confirmation of Appointments 2013, Department of Administration and Information, Dean Fawcett, Director. Department of Environmental Quality, Todd Parfit, Director. State Mining Council, Terry W. Adcock, State Inspector of Mines. Department of Enterprise Technology Services, Flint Water, State Chief Information Officer. Wyoming Aeronautics Commission, John R. Vinson. Wyoming Arts Council, Karen Stewart, Stephanie Boaster, Jennifer Lasek. Board of Barber Examiners, David Parson. Wyoming Business Council, Richard J. Bratton, Patrick H. Schmidt, Mike Wandler, Paul Cactus Covello, Jr., Pete Illaway. Wyoming Children Trust Fund Board, Jeff Schultz. Wyoming Community College Commission, Charlene L. Bodine, Sherry Lovercheck, Wendy Sweeney. Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund Board, Jim Davis. Board of Education, Scott J. Ratliff, Ken Rathbun, Lori Millen. Wyoming Enhanced and Improved Oil Recovery Commission, Jimmy Goolsby. University of Wyoming Energy Resources Council, Carl Bauer, Tom Botts, David Emery, Martha B. Wersch, Gene Hull. Environmental Quality Council, Andrew Schwartz. Wyoming Game and Fish Commission, Mark Anselmi, Keith Culver. Industrial Siting Council, Jim Miller, John Cora. Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, J. M. Schaefer. Board of Insurance Agents Examiners, James Kaufman, Robert Shum. Wyoming Livestock Board, Kellen Little, Todd Heward. Mental Health Professions Licensing Board, Brock R. Greek, Cindy Pomeroy, B.J. Ayers. Board of Medicine, Tom Spicer, M.D. Christina Stetka, M.D. Michael Jordine, M.D. Don Tardiff, P.A.C. State Mining Council, Michael Bird, Tim Mushbach, Tom Waterhouse. Occupational Health and Safety Commission, Franklin Monty Paddleford, Colonel Don Alston. Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Mark Dolger. Board of Outfitters and Professional Guides, Wendell Froughton, Michael Yardas. Paramutual Commission, Robert Atherton, Danny Glick. Parks and Cultural Resources Commission, Ron Lovercheck. State Board of Parole, Tony Escamilla, Gary D. Mitchell, Doug Chamberlain. Wyoming State Board of Pharmacy, Stephanie McAntee, Charlie Smith, Carrie Jean Kilgore. Wyoming Pipeline Authority, Bill Hawks. Wyoming State Board of Psychology, Mary Jo Atherton, Amanda Turlington, and Victor H. Ashir. Wyoming Real Estate Commission, Ray Elser. Wyoming Retirement System Board, Colleen Anderson. Wyoming Tourism Board, Renee Middleton, John Rutter, Lisa Anselmi Dalton. Wyoming Transportation Commission, Todd Seaton, Bob Ruart. Unemployment Insurance Commission, Beth Nelson. Board of Veterinary Medicine, Timothy Graham, DVM, George Ferris, DVM. Wyoming Water Development Commission, Floyd Canfield, Sean L. Hall, William B. Resor, Sheridan Little, Karen Bud Phelan. Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board, Steve Meadows, Mike Massey, Don Schramm, Mike Thomas.
Does any member wish to have any of the names read in from the consent list removed? Hearing none, the chief clerk will call the roll on the consent list.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper. Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geist,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, the appointments on the consent list have been approved. There have been three names that have been removed from the consent list. We will deal with them individually and vote on them individually. We will start with Nancy Schiffer, and where is she? Cultural Trust Fund Board. Senator Schiffer?
Declare a conflict on this nominee.
Okay. Any other discussion? Question's been called. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen. Cole. Cooper. Kraft. Dockstader. Driscoll. Amrick. Esquivel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Hines. Johnson. Landon. Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting. Perkins. Peterson. Rothfuss. Schiffer. Conflict. Scott. Von Flatron. President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 conflict.
By your vote, the appointment of Nancy Schiffer to the Cultural Trust Fund Board has been approved. Next individual for consideration by the Senate, William Russell, Public Service Commission. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, I've never done this before, and I absolutely have nothing against the two nominees that the governor has put forward for the Office of Public Service Commissioner. But I wish to bring, I would like to ask the Senate to vote no. And the reason is because, not because of the character of these people, but because of the trend, Mr. President. Since 2005, no one has appointed anyone other than a lawyer, President Company accepted, Mr. President, to the Public Service Commission. The last non-lawyer to serve at the Public Service Commission left the commission in 2008. So with these two appointments today, we've had five appointments in a row that are lawyers. Mr. President, I don't think that's a healthy trend. And the issues that the Public Service Commission deals with are complex economic and you know, the basis of rate making. And I think there needs to be a balance on the commission. And if we look around to all the surrounding states, every single state touching Wyoming has a balance on the commission. And, Mr. Chairman, some of them, you'll have a wide variety of professions that are represented. You know, Nebraska has one lawyer out of five. Utah has two lawyers out of three. Nebraska's two out of three. Idaho's two out of three. Montana is, I just looked it up. I believe it's got five commissioners, one lawyer. Mr. President, I think that balance is really important. And it's really important at the Public Service Commission as we move forward. These appointments are for 6 years. And the Public Service Commission law says that these folks should be appointed with the advice and the consent of the Senate. Not all the appointments say the word advice and consent. Our advice is that they need more than lawyers, Mr. President, and that's what it should be. Mr. President, I've had the privilege of working on public service commissions around the world. I helped establish commissions in several countries. I always look to Wyoming as a model of balance and skill set that it takes to bring to these complicated issues. Continued appointment of a lawyer after lawyer after lawyer without any experience. This person has no experience whatsoever in business, accounting, finance. I'm sure he's a good person, Mr. President, but I speak against his appointment.
Further discussion? Question's been called. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll? Amrick,
no.
Esquivel,
no.
Geis,
no.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
no.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
no.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott, Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 6 ayes, 24 noes.
Oh, I guess I have to read something here. By your vote, the appointment of William Russell to the Public Service Commission has been disapproved. We're now on the appointment of Kara Brighton to the Public Service Commission. Senator Case.
Mr. President, the same arguments apply. We already have one attorney who's the chairman of the commission, very fine, and he's doing a very fine job. This is another attorney, and I'm certain that this one also is a very good person. But, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, not qualified for the job, and we should ask the question, what happens if this appointment is turned down? Then the governor can make a temporary appointment under our rules, and they can serve until we come back.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I rise to declare a conflict of interest on this particular nominee. I'm in litigation with my neighbors over water matters. She is the attorney for my opponents, and she's cost me a significant amount of money with her legal tactics, and I cannot be objective on this appointment, Mr. President, so I ask to declare conflict and be excused from voting on this nominee.
Conflict is noted. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I rise to declare a conflict on this particular nominee. She is a lead counsel for myself and some other farmers in a water litigation, not against the tall senator from Minnesota, it hasn't risen to the point of litigation, but it may. We're in conferences now. It has to deal with several farmers on the other side of the line, landowners, one of which is the governor. But I did have the opportunity to speak with Kara when she told me this. And, folks, I got to say that this is a bright young individual. She's going through extensive training to make herself knowledgeable on the issues, and I think it would, if not for the conflict, I would definitely vote aye for this individual. I have worked with her in many, many hours, and I know that her abilities would serve both the Public Service Commission well and the state of Wyoming. With the recent vote that we just had in the direction that we gave the governor to have some diversity on the commission, that leads him for an opportunity to add that diversity. I think this individual would serve Wyoming well and the Public Service Commission well, and I ask for a favorable confirmation vote on Ms. Brighton.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, the Chief Clerk. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Johnson. Well, you're kind of a church mouse. Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And I, too, would ask you to vote for Kara Brighton. 5 on the committee. The chairman voted no for philosophical reasons. My lanky friend from Natrona County voted no because of conflict, and the other 3 voted aye on both of them, but I'm talking about Ms. Brighton. You came to me with your recommendations from your committees on your candidates, and I really trust you, and I voted for them. No questions. You know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. So please do that for the majority of us on Corporations Committee.
Further discussion. Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I would rise in favor of the candidate.
I felt like this candidate made a good presentation in our committee, and of course she spoke right up and said she did not have the background in a lot of areas, but she was willing to work and learn. And I guess my question would be, who do we appoint to this commission and a lot of others that really have a lot of background in that area? And if we find someone that's young and have a successful career, I feel like we should give them that opportunity to learn. So I would speak in favor of this candidate.
Further discussion. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I speak against the candidate not knowing the candidate, and once again, concurring with the good senator from Fremont County, that I have no doubt this is a person of excellent character. But we voted down one candidate, not knowing that individual, again, assuming this was an excellent candidate. Now we're going to arbitrarily choose between them and support this second candidate somehow. First of all, that's a relatively unfair and arbitrary standard that we've just put forward. The argument that was made previously was that we need to provide some diversity on the PSC to ensure that we have good decision-making. One candidate that's not a lawyer does not diversity make. We need to add other expertise. Perhaps we can have one economist, perhaps we can have somebody who's an engineer. That's going to provide a better diversity. Then we'll have four lawyers that can write everything down. That'll be excellent. Maybe we even need a third person who's not a lawyer. If we're going to strive to have better decision-making on the PSC, which is critical, we've had a lot of issues come through here, Mr. President, where we want the expertise of the PSC to be making good judgment on whether or not rates, for example, with regard to our electrical power production, are reasonable, are directly relevant to what we want in the state of Wyoming, that we're not having rates due to renewable energy portfolios that are being exported. We need economists to be looking at that and understanding the situation, not simply people who are able and understanding the law side of it without necessarily understanding the economics. So I agree with the good senator who spoke previously. We need to attempt and move towards a diversification of the PSC, as well as probably other bodies, to ensure that we have a diverse view represented that's in the best interest of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on and against the nomination, for the same reasons that the minority floor leader just stated, but in addition, the PSC is one of only two boards or commissions in the state with that are actually paid on a salaried basis. Everybody else, every one of these other commissioners and members of these boards are paid. They'll be some cases paid some salary, but mostly it's just per diem. It's mostly volunteer work. These people are paid over $100,000 apiece. And if you're a business and you're going to hire somebody, you want to do a job like that that is very specialized. You want somebody with experience in that. You wouldn't do this in your business. So I don't quite understand why we would be doing it on the government level.
Further discussion. Hearing none. Senator Meyer.
You know, folks, I hope you haven't really made up your mind right now on this one here. And if you have thought about voting no on this, that you realize that in the 11th hour here, we're coming up with specific qualification for Public Service Commission members, and it's not in statute. It's the 11th hour. I don't know how much communication that all of us has made to the governor downstairs. I'm sure that the good senator from Fremont County has made his views known and about that need for diversification. But having worked with this person, I know that she's up to the task. And really, folks, again, it's the 11th hour. If these qualifications aren't spelled out in statute, and we had that opportunity to do that on the Board of Education this year, where we said we wanted somebody from a state school board or from a local school board to serve on that state school board. And we made that determination that we needed that experience on that State Board of Education. And, you know, if it's important, and I believe that it is, the proper way to advise the governor is through a statutory means that says, this is what we expect, and this is the diversity that we expect on the Public Service Commission. And this is the criteria that we expect. But to do it arbitrarily in the 11th hour, to just say you can't have intelligent, bright young people who want to serve the state on a board in this capacity, that they're not capable or competent to do it for the term of 6 years, I think that that we need to rethink that process a little bit. Go back into the statutes, tell the governor exactly what we think is fair. But I ask for a aye vote for the nomination.
Further discussion. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson? Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott Conflict? Von Flateren?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 13 ayes, 15 noes, 2 conflicts.
By your vote, the appointment of Kara Brighton to the Public Service Commission has not been approved. Where's the majority floor leader? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved. Wow. That was something. Okay. What do we have? Jeez Louise. We may need to do... The Senate will stand at ease for a moment. I'd like to see the minority floor leader, majority floor leader, and the vice president at my desk here, please. Messages from the House.
Messages from the House. Message number 483, concurrence passed. The House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 127, ayes 59, excused 1.
already read that one.
Okay. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 484, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Landon, are you ready on concurrence request, message 474, in reference to Senate File 153?
Mr. President, I am.
Reading clerk will read in the message.
February 26, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 474, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 153, Unemployment Compensation, Direct Sales. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move message 474 referencing Senate file 153, Unemployment Compensation Direct Sales. Fellow senators, this bill essentially comes back to us exactly the way we crafted it here with the help of our Corporations Committee. It comes back very, very clean. All the House side did was to add one word, and that was to connect paragraphs A and B on the back side of your first page there on page 2. Just to simply insert the word and. Mr. President, I think that's acceptable. So I would ask for your favorable vote. Thank you.
Discussion. Question's been called. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstader, Driscoll, Amrick, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Is excused.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 2 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on amendments to Senate File 153. Senator Geis, are you ready on message number 475 in reference to Senate File 160, pesticides?
Yes, Mr. President.
All right. I'd have it read in at this time.
February 26, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 475, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 160, pesticides. The Senate file listed above passed on a third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, I would move message 475, being Senate File 160, and ask you to vote aye. What they did is on page 1, line 4, after penalties, insert limited local regulations of pesticides. And then on page 3, line 10, after intro, insert by creating a new subsection, and this is what the subsection says, subsection C, except as otherwise provided by the Wyoming Environmental Pesticide Control Act of 1973, no political subdivision of this state shall adopt or enforce any ordinance resolution, rule, or regulation regarding pesticide storage, sale, distribution, notification, or use that is more stringent than the Wyoming Environmental Pesticide Control Act of 1973 on the rules promulgated there under. So I'd ask you to vote aye.
Discussion. The motion is that, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I think we ought to think a little about this one. They've put a fairly major change in here, preempting the local communities, and it does strike me that there are occasions where the local communities may need to do something, either because of specific problems with pesticides getting into the wastewater and affecting their wastewater treatment abilities that may well go beyond what the federal regulations and state regulations require, and second, due to potential problems in their landfills. And those are reasons where a local community may need to do something. So I think we ought to think about what they've done here and go back and visit with the House and make sure that what they've done in this instance really makes sense, because I suspect it may not.
Well, Mr. President, the way I read this particular section is it just says that they shall do nothing that is more stringent than the Wyoming Environmental Pesticide Control Act. So I don't think we're saying that they shouldn't do something. We just don't want it to be more stringent than.
Motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 160. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Kirk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Von Platern. President Ross?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on amendments to Senate File 160. Senator Driscoll. Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 478 in reference to Senate File 136 for concurrence request?
Yes, Mr. President, I am.
Reading clerk will read in message 478.
February 26, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 478, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration 3. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on message 478. Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration, asks the body to vote aye. Mr. President, what the House did was basically just make it a more efficient way to say the same thing that we were saying. If you recall, this was about that the Oil and Gas Commission would not accept a surety bond from a seismic company unless they had permission from either the mineral owners or the surface owner. Well, if they have a surface use agreement, they don't need the bond from the Oil and Gas Commission. And so what they did was just make it more efficient in stating that they said to issue the bond, they have the right, shall provide evidence of the right to enter to conduct geophysical seismic operations issued under the authority of 35104. And then on line four, they say derived from one or more mineral interest owners. It basically says the same thing that the bill said when it left. Just like I said, it says in a more efficient way. So I'd ask the body to vote aye.
Discussion. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a little clarification. Did I hear the good senator from the big horn that's up there say that you don't need a bond if you have a surface use agreement? I'm kind of curious if you may have a surface use agreement, but don't you still have to have some performance of a surface use agreement?
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, we're talking about two different bonds. One's the performance bond that you have to get from the Oil and Gas Commission. This bond that's referred to in this is the bond that would be gotten under the Split Estate Act.
Further discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 136. You've been asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader? Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Von
Flatron?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote?
Barnard,
aye to no. Closing? Vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 136. Senator Coe, are you ready on message number 476 in reference to Senate File 47?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read in.
You got to find the votes. Not really. February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 476, concurrent requested. Mr. President, Senate File 47, School Finance Amendments. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I would move message number 476 being original Senate file 47 school finance amendments on concurrence and ask the body to vote no. Mr. President, what happened here on third reading amendment number one, we went in and looked at the sponsor of the amendment went in and looked at the regional cost adjustment and brings for consideration the hedonic index. Now, this is an index. Now, remember when we talked about regional cost adjustments and recalibration, and that's where this discussion should take place, you're allowed to go with the WCLI, the Wyoming Cost of Living Index, or the old hedonic index, or 100, that being the statewide average. What this amendment does, it brings in the hedonic index. It has about $5.1 million of additional regional cost adjustment in it. But the key point to this, Mr. President, is that I believe this discussion should take place in the recalibration process that we do every 5 years. So it's a big amendment. I'd ask that the body vote no, and we go over and talk about it.
Discussion? Question's been called. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 47, and you've been asked to vote no. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
Yes. Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
President Ross?
Aye. Save my bacon there.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 47. The conference committee for Senate File 47 is as follows. Senator Coe, chairman. Senator Anderson, District 2. And Senator Rothfuss. Senator Driscoll, are you ready on message number 477 in reference to Senate File 118, eminent domain?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Just a moment. I'll have the reading clerk read in message 477.
February the 26th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 477, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 118, eminent domain 2. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 35, noes 23, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Bensk, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, I move that when the Senate votes yes in concurrence on message number 477. What the House has done on this is on line 1, page 10, they did a little bit of language cleanup on it. Same on line page 2, line 15. On page 2, line 16, they changed 10% on the appraisals on it to 115%, which is basically moves it from 10% to 15% on that, which was a good change in my opinion. On page 2, line 3, after action, they inserted without prejudice, and that's if the first part of this is not meant. It says that if a judge dismisses the case on it, it's without prejudice, they can bring it back. And then on page 2, line 20, insert, and it says attorney's fee and other expenses warranted under this section from a public entity to a condemnee shall be reported by the public entity which paid the fees to the Wyoming Attorney General within 60 days of the award. The Wyoming Attorney General shall collect this data and report annually to the governor on the amount of all taxpayer-funded fee awards beginning July 31, 2014. This report shall identify the name of each party to whom award was made, the name of each counsel of record representing each party to whom the award was made, and the public agency which paid each award and the total amount of each award. This is a reporting deal so that if the governor can see, and we can as well, is if this bill's not doing what it was intended to do, it's going to put it there, particularly at the public agencies.
This was a good bill. The House made it better. I kind of hate to say that. We didn't have anything. We're doing it. So I would ask you to vote aye on this concurrence.
Discussion. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. President. A question looking at the concurrence request. And what I'm looking at is on the amendment on page 2, line 3, where the House members added the words, without prejudice. As I understand what without prejudice means, that even after you get a court ruling, it's never the final ruling. It can go on till the statute of limitations runs out. Now, the way this deal works is you get a big power company that wants to put a power line through you, and you're the rancher. If they get a ruling without prejudice, they get a decision. If it's not favorable, their pack of lawyers comes back, files it again and again and again until your lawyer owns your ranch, and then he sells out to the... Nah, that isn't what happens. But it goes on forever. That's my point. And that's why this was put in here, so that the landowner would be in court till the statute of limitations ran out. I think that's what it says. I may be wrong. I'm no lawyer, but I can sure smell a rat.
Further discussion. You've only got two times, so.
There's no more.
Anybody else wish to discuss this? Discussion on this concurrence. Okay, go ahead.
Last chance.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, he's absolutely right. But they also can refile lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit on condemnation. There's no law that says they can't refile. It doesn't say when it's dismissed. When it's with precedent, with prejudice, it's done. That's in existing statutes, what we have right now. It's without prejudice. It goes on forever. This really didn't change that end of it. What it said is that there will be a ruling in the suit. And if that ruling goes against them, they have the chance to refile. We talked about this on the floor. And it doesn't stop what happens right now. It just says that they've got a chance to redo it. And, you know, when you're trying to show public good on these three deals, and we talked about that a lot on the floor, there's a reason why, if it's thrown out on something small, that there's no reason they can't come back with that thing. Judges have low tolerance with many times of coming back. I would advise you to go ahead and vote yes on the concurrence, please.
Motion is, just a moment. Senator Driscoll took a second time. Now, I would allow you that opportunity because I know you've been busy on some other things with people sitting in the back. but I would like to...
The explanation, and that is, does the without prejudice only deal with the first part of the condemnation process? That is, you have to go in and develop a need, and then the second part is going to the hearing. I think once you go to the hearing, it's final. And it's a big difference. And the sponsor concurred with the request of the KC senator that said that this applies even after you've gone to completion. That should not be the case. If that is the case, it should go to conference.
Okay. Question's been called. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 118, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll? Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 10 ayes, 20 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 118. Conference Committee will be Driscoll Chairman, Senator Nicholas, and Senator Perkins. Do we have any more? Huh? Okay, we have Joint Conference Committee reports. Senator Von Flatern. When do you want to do that? You want to do it now, or do you want to do it before Conference Committee reports? Let's do it now.
Yeah, let's just do it.
Okay. We have another concurrence? Oh, okay. Senator Nicholas, we have a, are you ready on message number 456 in reference to Senate File 61 Revisers Bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. I am, and I move.
Just a moment. Have it read in.
Okay.
February the 25th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 456, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 61, Revisers Bill. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 456, concurrence with Senate File 61 Revisers Bill, and ask you to vote aye. Mr. President, I asked for this to be set back from this morning because I had seen something, and when we chase it down, I'm fully comfortable with it. All of the amendments that you see here are conforming in nature. On the first one, you'll see they went back in and took a look at the form for notice of intention to file lien. That was the Love Now Amendment. They took the words, they added in or as agent. You'll find that same language exists in other substantive statutes, so this makes it conform to those substantive statutes. Then you have the correction on the legal description on the second amendment. And then you have the various other amendments back to the purchase of state vehicle and operating of natural gas. But the staff have now gone through and confirmed that all of these are reviser in nature, that simply conform prior statutes to the correct citations. I'd ask that you vote aye.
The motion is that Senate do adopt do concur on Senate File 61. You've been asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick? Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 61. Now we're going to Joint Conference Committee reports. Senator Von Flatern, are you ready on Joint Conference Committee report number 1 in reference to House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery?
Mr. President, I am.
We'd ask the reading clerk to read in the Joint Conference Committee report.
Joint Conference Committee report, House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery, reference Senate message number 391, signing for the House, Representative Dave Zwanitzer and Representative Byrd, signing for the Senate, Senate Von Fladern, Burns, and Emmerich.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Conference Committee number one report to House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery. And what this does is go into page 22, line 14, and if you remember correctly, this was always, when the bill came to us, that the money, the revenue, if any, would flow to city, towns, and counties. What we amended over here was to put it to the common school account within the permanent land fund, and it went back to the House, and they didn't like that idea so much, so we met, and the resolve on that was page 22, line 14, after otherwise, you would insert, until June 30th of 2019, the first $6 million in each fiscal year of, and then the original language about the percentage going to the counties, cities, towns, and counties, based on the amount of sales that they are in relation, how amount of sales tax they generate in relation to total sales tax of the state. So no matter where the tickets were sold, the additional revenue would be based on how much sales tax your town, city, county generates as a percentage of the whole state. And then at the bottom of page 22, we deleted, as provided in Wyoming Statute 3915.111b3. And what that was just a repeat of what is stated in the bill and actually muddled up. Since we already put the formula literally in the bill, we didn't need that reference. So that was just deleted as cleanup. On page 23, after line 11, you create a little C, and you state in there that until June 30th, 2019, that's 6 years basically from this June 30th, after $6 million is distributed to each, in each fiscal year as provided in subsection B of this section, any remaining monies deposited to the lottery account which are attributable to that fiscal year shall be paid by the treasurer to the common school account within the permanent land fund. So we did put the common school account back in there. Anything over $6 million, the first $6 million goes to cities, towns, and counties. But we also put a six-year cap on this. It will probably only be running for about 4 years, approximately, when this kicks in, when we have this technically a sunset. And you can imagine, any time in between, the legislature can always redistribute that fund. But this is the way they have the revenue from the lottery being distributed. This is what we came to the agreement with the House. I ask for your aye vote on this, Conference Committee.
Discussion. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick question of the sponsor and he who has returned from conference committee. I thought I heard something about the distribution of these monies to cities, towns, and counties in relation to how much the county generates. Can you explain that just a little bit further for me, please? Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, folks, this doesn't give anything to the state. It says that the state will pay the cost, will pay all of the cost of those people that are adversely affected, whether it's because they go on to Medicaid or whether or not there's if they need to go in and have mental health issues dealt with. We pay for all the costs. The cities, towns, and counties now get to pick up not only the additional sales tax revenues, if there are, because these folks allegedly are shopping in Wyoming, and they also get to pick up the revenues from it. So they get all the pluses. We get all the minuses. You know, folks, at some point you have to say that's just not fair. Now, this notion, frankly, that every time that everybody around us is engaging in something for profit, we ought to jump in and gain that profit. I suppose now that certain drugs are illegal in our South State, we ought to bring them up because you can tax them too and give all the tax to the local communities, and then we'll pay for all of the law enforcement issues. We'll pay for all of the
the cost that associated with the state. But at some point, you just have to say, I go back to the liquor example. Liquor does have adverse economic impacts that we have to address every year on an ongoing basis. But we also take the tax off and goes in the general fund, and it funds the Medicaid system. To bring up a system that we know they're going to have equal, or not maybe equal, but are going to have substantial impacts on our budget, and to say we'll pick up all the expenses and you take all the income is very expensive. I'd urge you to vote no.
Further discussion, Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I want to remind the body, when this bill left here, it said that these proceeds were going to go into the common school fund. And all the debate that we had here on the floor said that it might generate upwards of $6 million. This is a complete acquiesce to the House, because now it says, we're going to give it back to the towns and the cities and the counties up to $6 million, and then after that it'll go into the school fund. All the debate that we had here says this: if we're lucky, it'll get us to $6 million. It came out of this body, said it's going to go into the common school account. So we can either stand by our position, or we can just throw in the towel and let the House do what they want. I'd urge you to vote this down and protect the position of the Senate.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the conference, this is a democracy. Nobody ever gets everything they want. At a democracy, we don't know how much we're going to earn off this lottery. We won't know till we've run it for a few times. This strikes me as a reasonable compromise in the position between the two houses, and I would urge the Senate to go ahead and adopt it. If the revenue stream doesn't turn out the way we want, it's not an overwhelming amount of money. We can deal with that any number of ways, including revising it at any session down the road. I would urge us to adopt the conference report, and let's get this started because the people want it.
Further discussion? Yikes. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I remind the body that there is in the undisputed part of the bill already money that is going to treatment for gambling dependency, anything like that. I suspect that money will be used actually for dependency on on addiction to other forms of gambling. Keep in mind, this is one of those lotteries where it's not instant scratch off or instant gratification. If you buy a ticket, you have to wait 2 or 3 days until that drawing. And it's been shown that doesn't necessarily cause addiction. So, and as to any of the other expenses involved, keep in mind those are borne by the corporation. There's nothing coming back on the state in terms of expenses for this. When the bill came here, this is the way it was. The money was going. That's the way the sponsors, both House and Senate, had agreed to put it in the first place. The House didn't like what we had done, so as the good lanky senator from Natrona County mentions, what we did was agree to it for a certain amount of time. Realistically, about 4 years, and then the legislature will revisit that. But at that point, then we'll have historical data to go by as to how much money this thing is actually generating. Keep in mind, the whole thing is projected. We don't know if it's going to make a lot of money or not make a lot of money.
Question. Mr. Senator Von Flader.
For my second time, Mr. President, I'd just like to explain that distribution formula. So if a county generates $100 out of the $1,000, that's 10% at that county. They'd get 10% of the proceeds out of this, go to that county, and then distributed by population to the cities, towns within that county. Thank you, Mr. President.
Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 77. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Kirk? Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote. Bebout, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 77. Senator Coe, are you ready on Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1?
And I am.
Reading clerk, read in the Joint Conference Committee Report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1, reference Senate Message Number 373. Signing for the House, Representatives Teeters, Bilkrey, Stubson. Signing for the Senate, Senators Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I would move the Joint Conference Committee Report, reference Senate Message Number 73, that being original House Bill 91, and ask the body to vote aye and defer to Senator Rothfuss for an explanation of the Conference Committee Report.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we had a good meeting with the folks over in the House. There was one point of contention. It was still the point of contention about Compass. They were willing to accept all of the other Senate amendments, taking it back largely to the original position. What we see in the Conference Committee report is a couple of key changes. One is the overall theme, though, is that the Hathaway success curriculum eligibility, which would have been piloted based on one of our amendments, goes in, you can see it on page 3, line 11, and becomes a component of the college readiness within the accountability model. So that was going to be piloted, that's going to be rolled in, and that data will be used. The language that ended up being adopted by the conference committee is flexible to allow that to be used in a variety of different ways, depending on what the technical advisory committee determines being best. Then with regard to the compass is still in place, but if you turn to page 2, the key language is on page, it shows on page 11, line 19 and 20. The concept that the computer adaptive college placement assessment shall be optional, and students shall be provided at least one opportunity to take the test during their senior year. That was language that we had. And you can see that that's added with, again, on page 18, line 18, or be provided the opportunity to take the compass. The key difference is that the compass moving forward will not be used in the actual education accountability model, but will instead be piloted, so the data will be collected based on the same criteria that the Senate gave before, not used as a component yet. And then when you move to page 3, Mr. President, the major revision shown on page 22, line 19, indicates the pilot system shall analyze and recommend possible use of results from the computer adaptive placement assessment in grade 12 administered pursuant to the Wyoming statutes in a manner that is technically valid and defensible. The results from the computer adaptive placement assessment shall be aggregated at the school level, etc. So the key here is shifting the compass, which is that computer adaptive placement assessment as we currently have under contract for this year, that will be pilot instead of aggregated into the data, and then we'll look at the data, assess whether or not it's a useful component. That was the key sticking point between the two chambers, was whether or not it was a useful data point. We've basically said, all right, well, let's collect the data point and let's take a look at it for a couple of years and decide whether it does what the Senate's position thinks it should do or whether it's not a good piece of data, which was the House position. It was a good compromise, Mr. President. I'd urge the body to vote yes.
Any discussion? Question. Question's been called. Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 91. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fletern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Meyer. Aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 91. Senator Hicks, are you ready on message number 436, Joint Conference Committee Report in reference to Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program?
Mr. President, when the body rise, I report.
Just a moment. I got to have it read in.
No.
Thank you.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program, reference House Message Number 436.
Senator,
signing for the House, Representative Wallace, Barlow, and Dan Zawalitzer. Signing for the Senate, Senators Hicks, Driscoll, and Schiffer.
Senator Hicks.
Oh, Mr. President, I'd ask the bodies to vote yes on the conference committee report.
Okay. Question? The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 75. You're asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call the roll. Senate File 75, excuse me.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Fletern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 75. Senate File 75. Okay. Joint Conference Committee Report in reference to Senate File 83. Senator Peterson, are you ready?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read in the conference committee report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 83, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, reference House Message Number 440. Signing for the House, Representatives Bob Nicholas, Harvey, and Larson. Signing for the Senate, Senators Peterson, Perkins, and Schiffer.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move reference House message number 440 to the original Senate File 83, Medicaid Fraud Recovery, and ask for the body to vote aye, please. This has been a long road, Mr. President, and this is breaking new ground for the state. This is our first False Claims Act, and I guess what the House did, you saw the number of amendments, Mr. President, and most of them we concurred with and agreed. They enhanced the bill. Many of them defanged the bill.
And so we won't be able to draw the blood that we wanted to with this Medicaid Fraud Act, but we'll still be able to leave a nasty little mark. So with that, Mr. President, I would ask that we vote aye and take this out for test drive. Let our AG's office try it out for a year or two and come back and visit. If there's anything that we need to tweak and fix, we can go after it at that time, and maybe the House will see our way a little bit better in a year or two. Thank you.
Discussion? Question has been called. Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 83. You're asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Burns.
Excused.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 83. Senator Hines, you ready on Joint Conference Committee Report in reference to House Bill 66?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading, clerk will read in the Joint Conference Committee Report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, House Bill 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities, reference Senate Message Number 303, signing for the House, Representative Lockhart, Gere, and Harshman, signing for the Senate, Senators Hines, Cole, and Rothfuss.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I move that we do adopt the Joint Conference Committee Report on House Bill 66, message number 303. What the conference committee did, as you can see, we adopted three Senate amendments. The first one was a Schiffer-Nicholas-Hicks amendment where the transfer grant account and the loan account could not be spent until we have a priority list of properties that are approved by the legislature. Second amendment with the co-amendment where local operators would have to cease on the disposal, on page 5 of the bill. And the other amendment we adopted was the one that the Appropriation Committee increased the total amount to $4 million on grants and $1.5 million on loans. And, of course, these cannot be spent until the legislature approved the list. The amendments that we deleted was the Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 from the second committee, the Appropriation Committee, that they wanted general fund money instead of the municipal solid waste landfill account. That was deleted. And also the Hicks Amendment on the transfer costs on page 5. Any questions? I'll refer you to the two experts that committee that's on the bill, but everybody seems to be satisfied on the two committees, so I ask your support to adopt the conference report.
Any discussion? Question is, then, that the motion is the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 66, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing.
Case aye.
Case aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee report, number 1, in reference to House Bill 66. Mr. Vice President, are you ready on Joint Conference Committee report in reference to Senate File 90?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
And have the reading clerk read it in, please.
Better turn that on. Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 90, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Lands, reference House Message Number 438. Signing for the House, Representative Semlick, Bilkrey, and Greer. Signing for the Senate, Senator Bebout and Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Joint Conference Committee report to House Message Number 438, Senate File 90, Administrative Control of Acquired Institutional Lands. Mr. President, what your Joint Conference Committee did with the House was come up with a reasonable compromise on this particular Senate file. And what we did is we adopted one House amendment, it deleted the other one, and further amended. Mr. President, I'll explain the amendments that we came up with. As you may recall, the House took a position that they wanted to set up an institutional land revenue fund that would be specific to all three of the different agencies combined. This was a concern brought by the Senate, and so what we did, Mr. President, if you look at second page, section 2, we created the institutional land revenue fund to consist of funds from transactions involving institutional lands under those three statutes, which is Department of Health, Department of Family Service, and Department of Corrections, for which disposition is not otherwise provided for by state or federal law, which was our original language. The state auditor shall account for funds deposited in the account attributable to each individual department. Funds in the account attributable to each individual department shall not be commingled. Funds in the account shall only be appropriated upon further action by the legislature and to support the major maintenance and capital construction for institutions of the department to which the funds are attributable. Mr. President, what we did clearly is we took the money into one account, but we further subrogated it to each three of the agencies so it would only be spent in those accounts and only for major maintenance and capital construction. The other thing we did, Mr. President, is before we head in there that we would comply with local ordinance and zoning requirements. And, of course, trust lands don't have to do that, but we felt it was important enough that we added another subsection, and that is that the Board of Land Commissioners shall consult with the local officials or governing body having regulatory authority over the acquired institutional lands prior to authorizing the use or transfer of acquired institutional lands managed under subsection G of this section. We did that for all three of the agencies. I think this satisfied the concerns on the zoning, planning and zoning. And Mr. President, absent any questions, I would ask the body to vote aye.
Discussion. Senator Case.
Mr. President, I have a real hard time with this one, and I want to commend the chairman of our committee for working really hard on this bill to get it better. And I think it is a good bill. There's a piece that's in our control, and I want to bring it to the attention of the legislature. When this bill left our body, it had that if we sold land, that would go to the benefit of that specific institution, Mr. Chairman. For example, you all know I'm from Lander. The Life Resource Center, if we sold land, that would be in an account available to you, be used for major maintenance and capital construction for the Life Resource Center. And that was important to me, Mr. Chairman, and, you know, these places are getting older, and how are we going to put some money into them is my thinking. Now, as this bill stands right now, the account is created, but it's for the benefit of the entire department. And that means that it could be used for capital facilities and maintenance for any place in the department, Mr. President. And so you know. But it also says that that cannot be expended except by the approval of the legislature. So that's why I'm torn on this, because I do believe that the legislature, I can come and make the argument that that money came from the sale of this land, and you shouldn't take it away from that place. But I just felt I had to bring that to the Senate's attention, and the committee worked very hard on this issue. And I appreciate their work.
Further discussion? Question is, the motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 90. You've been asked to vote aye, and Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader? Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas? Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern? President Ross?
Aye.
Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 90. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side of the two nominees that were rejected on the Public Service Commission, William Russell, Commissioner, Kara Brighton, Deputy Chairman, I move for reconsideration of those votes tomorrow during the open executive session meeting to consider the balance of the nominees for offices sent up by the governor's office. It'll be tomorrow during that open executive meeting. I would also further request that, as part of that request motion, that the staff not send any confirmations of any conferees to the governor's office this evening, that all notices be held till tomorrow.
Without objection, that will be order of business tomorrow with regards to the remaining, and then we'll have a reconsideration vote on the two Public Service Commission candidates. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, just for clarification, how do we go about doing that? Are those two separate votes outside the list that we're going to consider tomorrow? In other words, are they standalone votes? Second question is, are we going to caucus before?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
The answer to that should be yes to both. We'll caucus before. And as I did today, we'll move the list and we'll hold those to be voted on separately.
Okay. Everybody clear? Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, not clear yet. Would that be two separate motions for reconsideration followed by two separate confirmation votes if they were achieved?
Thank you. For clarification, I probably should have made a separate motion for each of the individuals. And when they're called up, they will be voted on individually, alone, apart from the consent list.
Further questions? Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, just a question. How does this play into our rules of 12-10, paragraph D, that reconsideration, the motion is not debatable? How's this going to work into waiting 24 hours to do it?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. The nothing changes. I think that's part of the request to have a caucus before. They are not debatable tomorrow. I think we'll confirm that. So, but they will be they're not debatable. So, if you need more information, confer with the governor's office, confer with the committee. We'll have the opportunity before in a caucus to speak to it, but it will be an open executive session. They will be the last two votes to be voted on each individually.
Senator Anderson?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to be clear, the way I envision it, then, there would be a motion, a non-debatable motion, for reconsideration on the first candidate, and then a vote in regard to whether or not that candidate is in or out, and then there would be another non-debatable motion for reconsideration on the second candidate, and then we would immediately vote upon the second candidate.
That is correct.
And that will all take place in the open executive meeting tomorrow to be held to consider the other nominees.
Okay. Senator Perconino.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to make sure that we're in compliance with our rules, and I think what we just did, I think what the good majority floor leader did was provide open notice for the floor that he, on that day or the next succeeding day, may move for a consideration,
right.
And it was not an actual motion.
That is correct, Senator Perkins.
And to clarify as well, just to make sure folks understand, we have a separate rule that requires that for these votes or for this reconsideration, it has to be done before the message is sent to the chief executive officer. And thus I've asked for the entire list to be held till tomorrow so that no notice on the confirmations is given until we until after we make our final votes. But this one would have required the vote to be taken before any notification of the vote was given to the governor.
Okay. So, with all of that, do we have, we're done? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Presidente, hold on, son, unless you got something to add before on your what? Well, let's go into conference.
It goes back to pre-conference.
Well, I don't think I'll get killed. You'll be okay. Settle down. Just another issue. It's great to do this. It's fun. The last few days are fun. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 27th.
Announcements. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning in room S13 to have a hearing on the governor's appointment of Michael Lowell to the School Facilities Commission. Mr. President, your joint conference committee on Senate File 106 will meet at 9 a.m. That's Senator Perkins and Senator Nicholas in S13 to, like I said, talk about Senate File 106 and Mr. President, you want to make the announcement about Management Council?
Yes.
Mr. President, Management Council will meet in 10 minutes in room 302 to discuss interim topics. That's today in 302 in 10 minutes.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the Conference Committee on Senate File 60, the Medicaid reform, will meet immediately in the Senate Labor Committee room. The House is waiting for us. A remarkable patience. And that, we think, will take just a few minutes. And then the Conference Committee on House Bill 203, the Exchange Study Bill, will be immediately following that and in the same place, Senate Labor Committee room.
Further announcements? Hearing none. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Just said it with such passion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion's carried. Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 27th, I believe it is.